AI comes from the Berlin Music Lounge, presenting Toivo Band, Wednesday, January 7th. Minneapolis-based guitarist, composer, producer, and software engineer, Toivo Hannigan, assembles a band for a once-a-year performance. This year, it's in Berlin. The Berlin Music Lounge in Minneapolis, that is. There'll be avant improv jazz, sleepy rock, and lots of goofy things in between. More information about Toivo Hannigan's Toivo Band is available at berlinmpls.com.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Maria Matsuyota, Sunday, January 18th. Maria Matsuyota spent the last 15 years performing the pizzica music of southern Italy. With her latest release, Onda, Maria looks beyond the Mediterranean to Spanish flamenco, Andalusian, Nigerian, and other global styles. She blends the essences of rural tradition, contemporary instrumentation, and suburban flair to frame her voice. Opening the show is Paul Metzger. More information about Maria Matsuyota is available at thecedar.org. Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
And thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks for joining in. Charlene Dahl is my research PR person. Hello, Charlene.
Good evening, everybody.
Whatever it is. And Aaron is my podcaster. I have questions for the listeners. I'm just wondering if they ever notice themselves getting stiff in the morning, or if they're sitting too long. Maybe they have a lot of aches when the weather changes. And our topic today is arthritis. And we are speaking with Dr. Marta Michalska-Smith. And I hope I pronounced that right. And she will be talking about, she'll be giving us insights on this topic. So, hello, Dr. Marta. Is it okay if I call you Dr. Marta?
Of course. Yeah. Good evening. Thank you so much for having me, Sam.
Thank you so much for being on and giving us your time. Can you just give us a brief history about you?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Marta Michalska-Smith, and I am a rheumatologist here at U of M Health Fairview. So I work with the University of Minnesota, and I did my medicine pediatrics training here at the university, and then went to DC to do some my fellowship in rheumatology, and now I'm back as staff. So I have clinics kind of in two different locations in the cities, and then also work in the hospital.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's start out by giving the listeners an explanation of what is arthritis and how does it affect the body?
Yeah, great question. So arthritis is a very general term, you know, it just means inflammation in the joint. And as anyone with arthritis knows, that can cause some stiffness and pain in that joint. And if it's present for a long period of time and doesn't go away, it can actually cause permanent damage to that joint and a lot of, you know, disability. So we use our joints to walk and to, you know, be able to pick something up and grasp something. So it can really affect our daily function. And then when one joint is affected by arthritis, it puts stress on other joints and different mechanics. And so it can kind of affect a lot of areas of our body And there's also types of arthritis that don't just affect the joints, but are actually considered kind of full body diseases and can even affect other organs like our lungs or our eyes.
So how many different types of arthritis are there? When I was doing a little bit of research on this, it seems like there's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot more than people realize. I think, you know, when we think of arthritis, most of us think of osteoarthritis,
right,
which is the most common type of arthritis and is kind of traditionally thought of as kind of the wear and tear or non-inflammatory arthritis, although we now know that those are a little bit misleading terms because there actually is inflammation in the joint and it's not really all about wear and tear. But besides osteoarthritis, there are also these autoimmune arthritides. So that includes things like rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, juvenile arthritis. There's a host of these. And these are actually full body diseases that are about the immune system. So our immune system job is to kind of keep bacteria and foreign particles away and fight them. And in these autoimmune arthritides, it kind of gets dysregulated and it turns in on itself and attacks somebody's own body and the proteins in our body, and that causes inflammation. So that's kind of the other big camp. But there's also crystal arthritis, like gout and pseudogout, and then there's septic arthritis and infectious-related arthritis. So there's a lot out there.
So the most common ones, are there like just kind of two or three most common ones, and what would they be?
Yeah, so osteoarthritis is definitely the most common one. And then rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis are probably the two that I see the most. And I also see quite a bit of gout.
Ah, gotcha. So, yeah, I do hear about rheumatoid arthritis. I don't ever think I understood what that one exactly was. Like, how is that different from, you know,
all the other ones,
yeah,
that we mentioned? Yeah. So rheumatoid arthritis is in that same camp that we were talking about with psoriatic arthritis and juvenile arthritis, where it's an autoimmune disease. You know, the big question is, how do you differentiate all these different types of arthritis when someone comes in, right? And so rheumatoid arthritis actually affects slightly different types of joints than psoriatic arthritis, although there is some overlap. And we use, again, slightly different medications. But in all of those autoimmune arthritis, our treatments are kind of targeted at the immune system, since that's kind of the problem.
So are there general causes of what the primary causes are of arthritis?
Yeah, so it depends a lot on which arthritis we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But in general, there's always a genetic component and an environmental component to all the different types of arthritis. I think when we're talking about osteoarthritis, mm-hmm, there actually is a genetic component to that one too. So if your mom has, you know, really bad hand osteoarthritis in her 50s, you're a little bit more likely to also have earlier hand osteoarthritis. But there's this interplay of the environment. So, for instance, if you had an old football injury to your right knee.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, then
sports,
that knee is going to be... Yeah, right. That knee is going to be more likely to get osteoarthritis later in life. And similarly with all the other types of arthritis. So there's a little bit more of a genetic component, we think, with the autoimmune ones, like rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis. But again, there's an interplay with the environment. So there's usually a trigger that kind of triggers the arthritis. So you might kind of have this, you know, genes that set you up for getting rheumatoid arthritis, but then maybe a virus or an illness that you get, or your body goes through some kind of stressor that really activates and gets that immune system revved up, and then that'll trigger the rheumatoid arthritis to kind of, you know, bloom in you. And we actually see that, you know, in identical twins, just because one has rheumatoid arthritis, it doesn't mean the other one will. So it's
right,
not just genetics. There's always this kind of interplay between our genetics and then what our bodies go through throughout our lives.
So heredity and arthritis, if you're, you know, we were talking about if your parent had arthritis, that maybe you have a higher chance. Is there a percentage, or is it just kind of a hit and miss thing?
Yeah, good question. There's probably a number out there that I just don't know about exactly. You know, if both of your parents have rheumatoid arthritis, what are your chances? But it is a little bit of a hit or miss, and there's not, you know, I don't think that's too much that we can do to kind of control what happens with whether or not we get arthritis. But there are definitely things we can do, you know, to help protect our joints and to kind of help our joint health in general.
So I'd like to talk about aging. I always tell
Yeah.
everyone's aging, except for me. Well, you know, it's a good thought. So talk about how aging contributes to the development of arthritis.
Yeah, so when we think about osteoarthritis, that really is a disease of aging. So as we get older, more and more of us are going to get osteoarthritis. And
Is
that's
it
because,
of the bones, kind of, or?
yeah, so again, it's, you know, so again, the traditional way of thinking about it is you've got this joint and it's seeing stress, repetitive stress over time. And that repetitive stress kind of wears away at the cartilage, which is that tissue that cushions and protects the joint. And so as that wears away, you know, it causes inflammation and destruction. But we actually, the more we study osteoarthritis, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Of
And we
course.
know now, yeah, it's like kind of a disease of the whole joint. And there's a lot of factors that go into kind of who will develop osteoarthritis, not necessarily those who use their joints more. So I don't like calling it the wear and tear arthritis because I don't want
Right.
people to not use their joints, right? And to be like, well, I'm not going to go on my runs every day because that'll make me more likely to get osteoarthritis. And that's not quite true. There are a lot of metabolic factors in, you know, our joints are living tissues, and there are lots of different tissues that support our joints, and there's fluid in our joints. And so there's a lot that goes into it. But as we age, just like everything else, you know, things do start to break down sometimes and not function quite the way they're supposed to. And so it does become more common with age. And osteoarthritis does affect joints that kind of do see a little bit more stress more often. So like our knees or our hips. But with the other forms of arthritis, age is not, it's not really a disease of aging. So rheumatoid arthritis can affect young women in their 20s. There's another peak where it affects kind of more like a little older women or in the upper middle age. Ankylosing spondylitis is also not a disease of aging. So it usually affects more like young men. And of course, our juvenile arthritis affects children. The only other arthritis that has some age component is gout. So it tends to be more common in middle age and later. And in women, we really almost never see it until someone's postmenopausal. Yeah, because our estrogen is really helpful in gout and can be protective. So that one's also kind of associated with aging.
So I was going to ask what are some of the early warning signs of arthritis, but it occurs to me that the different ones would probably have different warning signs. So could you take the most common osteoarthritis? What are some of the warning signs that that's happening?
Yeah, great question. So stiffness in the joints, and pain that's kind of becomes a little bit more, not just like, oh, I went out and I did this thing and then my joints hurt for a couple of days, but becomes more of a daily thing where you're getting stiffness and pain, in the joints. Those are kind of the first warning signs, that you might be developing some arthritis in that area.
So I have an interesting, I have some sports injury and also like I was in an accident and when I found out I was developing some arthritis in my knees and I was so sad because I am very active and I was told by a you know physical therapist that don't wreak havoc on your joints, obviously, but don't slow down. Don't sit. Don't be sedentary. If you sit more, you actually cause it to go faster or to develop more. You need to move, 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 move. And that's what lubricates and keeps it at least less active or not as likely to progress as fast. Is this true?
Yes, it is. Exactly. So, you know, I like to say, if you don't use it, you lose it. Right. So movement really is key. Now, if your joint is hot, warm and swollen and really inflamed, then that's not a good time to put a lot of pressure on that joint, and you'll just increase the inflammation. Mm. But beyond that kind of situation, that kind of scenario, we really do a great disservice to our joints if we don't use them. So using them not only helps, like your physical therapist was saying, kind of increase blood flow and lubricate the joint and keep everything moving, but also strengthening the tissues around the joint, the muscles that support the joint. These are really important to our joint health and our bone health. And you mentioned an accident, you mentioned these injuries in the past. And that's something we see a lot, that when people have injuries and accidents, they might have some more problems with those joints. Mm-hmm. But it's really important to kind of sign up for that physical therapy, learn how to move those joints safely, and how to build up the strength around those joints and keep active.
But I presume the same thing happens as you age. Don't sit for long periods of time. Get up and move. Do something more active on a consistent basis.
Exactly. And a lot of people tell me, like, oh, when I first get up in the morning or when I stand up after sitting for a long period of time, I'm really stiff. And that is very normal. And to kind of have that stiffness when we've been sitting for a while and need to kind of move our joints. But that's actually one of the ways that helps me kind of differentiate between more of that osteoarthritis and that autoimmune arthritis, is how long that stiffness lasts before it gets better. So definitely move those joints. That's the kind of the core message.
And if you're one of those people that sits for long periods of time and don't have to do that, stop doing that. But if you get up in the morning and you're stiff, is this a time like that would be good for, like, why don't you start doing like a stretching routine where you start stretching and kind of working yourself slowly into, you know, that kind of thing? Is that a good thing to do, like, in the mornings when you're first getting up, so you can kind of just warm up your body, or no?
Yeah, no, that's really a great time. So, of course, you don't want to do anything that causes a lot of pain. Pain is our body's way of telling us to stop or slow down, and that we're causing injury. But we want to, when you're waking up in the morning, that's a great time to do some stretches, to kind of do some movement to bring that blood flow into the area. And that can really help prevent any injury, you know, from suddenly kind of moving. I also really like Tai Chi and yoga for people with arthritis.
Yeah.
Because it really helps with this kind of biofeedback and knowing kind of where our body is and our joints are, and working on balance and strengthening. And so there's actually a lot of there's evidence that especially Tai Chi can be really helpful with people with arthritis.
We need to take a short station break.
My Saturday begins at 6 a.m. and join Grand Diva, the host of R&B for Healing and Celebration on KFAI. Dee serves up a great recipe by combining R&B, old school, a bit of jazz and blues, the motivating diva moment, plus lots of fun. That's R&B for Healing and Celebration every Saturday, 6 to 9 a.m. on KFAI at 90.3 FM, or all over the world at kfai.org. See you on the radio.
You're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and kfai.org. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. We're speaking with Dr. Marta about arthritis. All different kinds. And I guess I want to talk about the different diagnostic approaches to different types of arthritis. How do you diagnose arthritis?
Yeah, so that's kind of the crux of what I do. And there's not one perfect test. And rather, it's a combination of things that I take into consideration. And really the most important thing for me is the patient's story and my exam. So if I'm listening to someone in my exam room, they can really tell me what type of arthritis they have and whether or not they have arthritis with their story. So for instance, you know, a big part of what I do is try and differentiate between osteoarthritis and the inflammatory arthritis and the different types.
Right.
And how much morning stiffness someone has, and whether there's swelling or redness or warmth, and what joints are involved are all really important pieces of the puzzle. And then of course my exam. So there are actually changes that happen to your bones, based on the type of arthritis you have. So I don't know if you might know some people who have, you know, or maybe near yourself, some knobbiness into their fingers, like kind of bony growths at the ends of our fingers. Mm-hmm. And those bony kind of nodes are actually very common in osteoarthritis. Whereas you'll see different changes to the hands with rheumatoid arthritis, where you might see kind of the fingers kind of moving out to the side. So our exam's really an important piece of the puzzle. And there are blood tests for some of these. So rheumatoid arthritis, one of the most common types of autoimmune arthritides, does have some blood work that has, you know, that we can get on people that shows that they have these antibodies. But those aren't perfect tests as well. You can have arthritis without those. With gout, of course, there's also a blood test that we check to see if there's a lot of uric acid or is this waste product in our body that can predispose people to getting gout. And then the other kind of pieces imaging. So when you take an x-ray of a joint, there are sometimes different patterns of wear and tear or destruction of that joint, mm-hmm. that we see more typically in osteoarthritis versus a different pattern that you would see in psoriatic arthritis or rheumatoid arthritis. So you take kind of all those pieces together, kind of again, with a lot of emphasis on what the patient or the person is telling me their symptoms are, and together you can kind of come up with a diagnosis for if they have arthritis and what kind.
So when you're talking about that, I was like looking at my fingers and like, okay, do I have these symptoms? I'm sure everyone out there is doing that as they're listening. Can you talk a little bit about psoriatic arthritis? How is it different than, or how does it relate to psoriasis? And what is psoriasis exactly? Because I do hear the term, but I don't know if I know exactly what that is.
Yeah, so psoriasis is a type of autoimmune skin rash. So usually it kind of comes up as like pink and kind of scaly rash. And it can be oftentimes mistaken with eczema. So mm-hmm. I tell people to really make sure, you know, they see a dermatologist and kind of get an accurate diagnosis, because it does have different kind of, you know, we think about different things for someone who has eczema versus someone who has psoriasis. And not, you know, and if you do have psoriasis, you are more likely to get psoriatic arthritis. But again, not perfect. So you can have psoriasis without psoriatic arthritis, and you can have psoriatic arthritis without psoriasis. So it can be a little confusing. But both of these diseases are really full body diseases. So they might show up in the skin, and they might show up in the joints. But you really need to be under the care of a doctor that can help monitor and make sure that it's not showing up in other places. So in that family of psoriatic arthritis and psoriasis, you can also get arthritis or inflammation in the eye. And sometimes it can be also associated with inflammation in the gut, like in, you know, inflammatory bowel disease. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a full body autoimmune disease.
Wow. So many different things. And hard to know, I'm sure, what you would have. Would, you know, you think of osteoarthritis where it's obvious you are stiff, and I mean, you probably feel that. With this arthritis, you know, psoriatic, do you notice it?
Yeah, exactly. You would. It would be very similar. Kind of the first kind of presentation is stiffness and pain in the joints.
Okay.
And it really differs more about where, you know, which joints are affected, and a couple of other kind of details of how long that stiffness lasts. And, you know, we had talked about how there is inflammation in osteoarthritis, but these autoimmune arthritides tend to be more inflammatory, so you might get more swelling or warmth or redness. And in psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis, you can get something called a sausage digit, so where your whole finger or your whole toe kind of swells up like a sausage. So it can be, it's not subtle usually. People, you know, with psoriasis don't need to worry about it if they're not having symptoms. If they're having symptoms, that's when they usually get sent to the rheumatologist to check and see if there's some psoriatic arthritis going on.
I know you talked a little bit about this, but can you touch on a little more about what gout is and how that interplays with arthritis, so that people understand? Because I hear the term gout, but I don't think of like what the symptoms might be, what causes that, things like that.
Yeah, so gout, it used to be considered this disease of rich nobility. The kings, you know, would get gout, and that is because some of the foods that can flare gout were foods that only, you know, the wealthy could afford in the past. But what gout is, so it's really interesting. So we all have something, we all make this waste product called uric acid. That's a kind of a byproduct of the foods we eat. And humans and apes are actually the only mammals that don't have a special protein that can break down uric acid into a form that we can pee out. So a little fun trivia for you today. But as this uric acid builds up, there are some people, for whatever reason, again, genetic usually, that they're not getting rid of their uric acid well enough, or they're making more of it and building it up. And if we have enough of that uric acid in our bodies, then it forms little crystals. And those crystals, they kind of get put in our joints, deposited in our joints, and they are very inflammatory. So it means they are really good at making our immune system angry. And so when that crystal kind of gets put in the joint, our immune system blows up and you get this really painful, really hot, red, swollen joint. If you know anyone who's had a gout flare, they will tell you it is very painful. Mm-hmm. And there's a great kind of art piece of something of what gout looks like. And it's this little devil on someone's toe. So the toe is a very common spot for gout to form.
We need to take another short station break.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Detroit at the Turf Club Saturday, January 10th. Flesh Rock Founders Detroit celebrate their longtime friend, manager, and hype artist Jim Weber with this belated birthday bash. Minneapolis's Detroit mixes rock, funk, and hip-hop, reflecting influences of Motown, punk, and rap. Their decade-spanning sound is the flesh-made rock and the rock-made flesh. Opening the show is Dosh. More information about Detroit at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
You're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. I want to remind you that if you want to be a part of our email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. This show depends on your comments and your feedback, so please give us some feedback on what you would like to hear for coming up topics. Today we're speaking with Dr. Marta. Dr. Marta is talking about arthritis, something that many of you may be familiar with, or at some point in your life will become familiar with. Dr. Marta, I'd like to talk a little bit about juvenile arthritis, which is not really necessarily affiliated with adults. Children get this. How is this different, and what causes it?
Yeah, so juvenile arthritis is also an autoimmune arthritis, so it's also kind of a problem with the immune system becoming dysregulated and attacking the own, you know, your body. And, you know, toddlers can get this, and children. And children are special because their joints and their bones are still growing.
Right.
And so when you have inflammation in this setting, it's even more important to control it, because if those growth plates, sometimes that inflammation can cause those growth plates to close prematurely, or in the beginning stages can actually make them grow too fast. And so that can lead, when they close too early, they can lead to, of course, shorter bones, and more permanent kind of changes. Juvenile arthritis also is a little bit more likely to have other what we call systemic manifestations, so inflammation in the eye or fevers. And so this is a whole, we have amazing pediatric rheumatologists at the University of Minnesota that deal with juvenile arthritis and take great care of these kids. And some of them will carry this diagnosis into adulthood, so they'll end up still having arthritis as an adult that needs to be
Oh.
treated. But some it can be pretty quiet, once we gain control of the disease. And we have such great therapies nowadays for juvenile arthritis that these kids are doing, are by and large doing very, very well.
So, how early can this be diagnosed in kids, and when do they usually start showing symptoms?
Yeah, so it can be kind of any stage of childhood. As a when you have a toddler who will develop swelling or pain in a joint, what we usually kind of how it usually comes to the notification of the parents or the doctor is that maybe a kid will be refusing to walk on a leg because they're having pain there, and it tends to be kind of like a knee that's affected. When you have older kids, of course, they can just tell you that their joints are hurting or that they're unable to do the activities that they used to be able to do because they're having pain in their joints or a visible swelling in the joint. And that's usually the first sign. Again, it can also be fevers that with the swelling. So all good reasons if a kid is having that to go get seen. There is also I should mention though a reactive so reactive arthritis is a thing. So that means if you get an infection, you can kind of get an arthritis after the infection, and that not doesn't always mean that that person's going to have a diagnosis of kind of ongoing arthritis. It can kind of just be a reaction to the illness, and it can go away and not cause major problems.
So you talk about that once you get this under control for the child, that oftentimes it's quiet as an adult, but they don't grow out of it. It's still there, right?
It's always something that we want to think about, and that we want someone to be monitored for, because it can come back. We can put this disease, what we call into remission, where it'll just be quiet and maybe stay quiet for, very long periods of time, but it can flare again, a decade later. And so we want to monitor for it and react respond if it does, come back or have another flare. But again, our goal is to keep it down.
So, what are some of the most common treatments for arthritis? I realize it's possible, depending on the type of arthritis, the treatment will change.
Yeah, so we'll start with osteoarthritis, right? Because that's
Okay.
probably the one we're
Yes.
all kind of familiar with and probably what they want to know what to do there. So with osteoarthritis, the treatment really centers around physical therapy and pain control. So we want to just kind of, like we mentioned earlier, we want to strengthen the muscles and tendons and the ligaments that support the joint. So physical therapy is the first line treatment. And using medications for pain like acetaminophen or ibuprofen can be helpful. Steroid injections into the joint can be helpful. And eventually, if we're not getting to where we need to go with those interventions, the only kind of cure for osteoarthritis is a joint replacement. And so some people will need eventually to get a joint replacement for their osteoarthritis. Now for the autoimmune ones, like the rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, juvenile arthritis, because these are diseases of the immune system, we use medications that target the immune system. And there are a multitude of these medications. They can be pills, they can be shots, they can be IV infusions that people go into an IV center to get. And so these medications suppress the immune system and target different parts of the immune system to kind of calm down that immune response. So just kind of those two approaches. And then lastly, you know, we mentioned gout, or gout's come up a couple mm-hmm. times. Actually, in Minnesota, we see a lot of gout because we have a very large Hmong population, and our Hmong Minnesotans have a genetic predisposition to get gout a little bit earlier and more aggressive than other folks. And so, if you're Hmong and you're struggling with gout, that's a really important time to kind of get plugged in with a doctor, because it can be a little bit more aggressive based on genetics. But in gout, the treatment really is twofold. So you want to treat, we talked about that kind of really angry inflammatory response, those crystals form.
Right.
So you want to put water on that fire. You want to get that inflammation down. And so we use certain medications like prednisone, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories for that part of it. But to prevent further flares, we really have to focus on getting that uric acid level down.
Mm.
And that is usually done with different types of medication and avoiding foods that are high in uric acid.
Yes, I was going to say this might be a case of a diet switch.
Yeah. So diet is helpful here. So foods that are high in uric acid are things like shellfish and red meat, or they're not high in uric acid. They're high in something called purines that then kind of converts to uric acid in our bodies. But red meat and shellfish and beer and other forms of alcohol, sodas, like things with high fructose corn syrup. Mm. So diet changes are important. They can flare gout, but most people can't control their gout with diet alone. They really will need a little bit of extra help from a medication to lower that uric acid level.
I want to just touch on, you talk about joint replacement if the joint gets too unusable or whatever the term is you'd like to use. Are they cadaver joints or are they, you know, manufactured joints?
Yeah, so most are manufactured. And we really rely on our orthopedic surgeons to stay abreast. There are you can get cadaver, for instance, cartilage transplants and things like that. But for most people, when you're getting a joint replacement, full joint replacement, it's going to be mechanical. So they have titanium. They have different materials that they use for those joint replacements.
All right. So we talk about physical therapy. And actually, I want to invite Charlene, who is my research person. Charlene, I want to ask you if there's any questions you have. And I'm wondering if you have experienced any of the arthritis joys of life yet. And maybe ask the doctor, like, how easy is it for somebody who is just getting some aches and pains to, you know, be able to get into physical therapy, just for some ideas on how to manage things. But did you have any questions, Charlene, before she answers?
Really not. Only thing I have is my little finger that I broke when I tripped one day. But my knees and stuff are pretty good. One thing I did is I started eating better and lose some weight.
Dr. Murray, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. No, Charlene, I'm glad you mentioned weight. I mean, that is an important factor here, too. So, you know, the more weight we carry, the more pressure we put on our joints. And so if you think about, if you go up and a flight of stairs, your knees see about 3 times your body weight in pressure. So losing weight can definitely help decrease the stress on our joints, but also fat is actually pro-inflammatory. So it can kind of amplify inflammation. So that's another reason that weight loss can be helpful in all kinds of arthritis, especially in psoriatic arthritis and osteoarthritis. We see that in gout. Weight also plays a role in obesity. And so eating healthy is good for all of us. And there's a lot out there right now about these, you might have heard, like the low inflammatory diets or anti-inflammatory diets. And my patients ask me about that a lot.
Right.
And we don't have, you know, we don't have controlled trials about diets. Really hard to study because it's really hard to kind of control what people eat all the time. And so I don't have great, you know, I can't say 100% for sure that this diet's helpful and this one's not. But in general, we do know that eating, you know, whole foods, non-processed foods, you know, eating things that come from the ground or from the farm are better for our overall health, and definitely also better for arthritis. And so eating a healthy, well-balanced diet, moving, you know, all the stuff that we all know is probably good for us for all kinds of other reasons too, is also good for us in arthritis.
Can you talk a little bit about, is there anything new you see coming up that is starting to be developed or promising that might change anything with arthritis?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's so much. And this is one of the reasons I picked rheumatology as a specialty, is there are so many exciting things on the horizon for treatment and prevention. So when it comes to the more autoimmune arthritis, mm-hmm. We used to just have a couple agents that we would use, and they were very, you know, you can kind of think of them as these like blanket agents, just kind of throw them in at someone and hope they work. But now we're really developing more targeted therapies. In the future, I think of arthritis treatment is really understanding everyone's very specific disease and which therapies will, kind of getting a blueprint for their particular disease and which therapies will work for them, because we have so many to choose from now that target very specific parts of the immune system, and not all of them work for everybody.
Right.
And so currently we kind of try one and we see if it works. If it doesn't, we move on to another one. But in the future, I think we're going to have a lot more information, probably a test up front that we could run that really says, here, this is your disease and this is what's going to work well for you. And with osteoarthritis, we mentioned, you know, how much has changed over time or our understanding of osteoarthritis, where we used to just think of it as a simple wear and tear. And now we realize it's a little bit more, much more complicated than that. And there are lots of researchers who are continuing that work to see if are there really, you know, things we can do to really help prevent arthritis from forming, or at least delay it, and to kind of help, you know, delay or prevent when we need to get those joint replacements. And probably the most exciting new treatment, again, more now going back to the autoimmune arthritis, is something called CAR T cell therapy. Uh-huh. That stands for chimeric antigen receptor therapy. And we actually have a couple clinical trials at the University of Minnesota for CAR T cell therapy in lupus and in rheumatoid arthritis right now. And this is a therapy where we take someone's immune cells out of their body, and then we genetically engineer them so that they kind of target problematic immune cells. And then we put them back into their body, and they go and they find those problematic immune cells and they attack them. And so far, the results of CAR T cell therapy have been extraordinary. Some are even calling it like a cure for arthritis, because people who've had, and for lupus, which is another autoimmune disease, but people who failed lots and lots of treatment options and are just not able to get control are being able to kind of, for the first time, go into remission with CAR T cell therapy. So if you or someone you know, you know, are dealing with arthritis, it's really difficult to treat and not responding well to therapy, then they should ask their doctor about maybe getting involved in one of the CAR T cell therapy trials at the university.
So would the CAR T cell be similar to immunotherapy?
Yeah, immunotherapy is kind of a broad term that encompasses a lot of different types of therapy. So this is one type, yes.
Gotcha. So it is targeting those cells. Mm-hmm. And I do want to touch a little bit on because you talked about, you know, that kind of thing. I presume you have to exhaust your other measures of, because some people who hear this say, I don't want to have to deal with all the other medications. I just want to go and try this. Are there downsides to doing that? Or could they not just jump to trying this to see if it works?
Yeah, so right now, because this is still an experimental treatment, in order to get into a trial, you need to have failed, you know, at least two or three other, usually three other treatment options that already are, you know, approved, FDA approved, and have gone through all the measures. So we're still, you know, we're still in this experimental phase of this treatment. So mm-hmm. If it becomes, which I think it will, you know, approved and goes through all the safety checks, then it might, you know, be available to people a little bit earlier. But it's, you know, probably expense is going to be the the tricky part here, how to get this therapy to be actually, you know, affordable for people. Right now, the insurance companies won't cover it and cover expensive therapies unless you've first failed some of the less expensive ones first. As for kind of risks, that's, again, still being parsed out, but there is an inflammatory, anytime you're dealing with the immune system and you're kind of trying to alter it, you risk kind of stimulating the immune system in other ways that you weren't wanting to. And so you can get kind of a different inflammatory response from this therapy and from some of the other ones that we use as well.
So I presume some of the new tests and things that you're talking about that talk about discovering your kind of blueprint, so to speak, of arthritis would be like a blood test that you'd get.
That's the goal, right? It's got to be something that's easy to get done, that's relatively inexpensive to run, and that can help us predict, you know, what you're going to respond to, and which combination of medications you'll respond to. So that's kind of what I see as hopefully in the future of arthritis care.
So now that we've talked about like a lot of this stuff, and people are probably thinking, well, I already have arthritis, and what do I do now besides get on a good regimen and follow a good doctor's orders on what to do for yourself? Can we talk about preventative or things that will help slow the process? What can people do to either prevent arthritis or slow it from progressing?
Yeah, so I think with this one, we'll talk more about osteoarthritis, right? Because again, different types of arthritis, we're going to kind of approach those in different ways. With osteoarthritis, we mentioned a healthy weight can be helpful, continuing to move our joints and strengthening the muscles that support our joints are both very important parts of kind of keeping our joints healthy and preventing them, arthritis from forming. But we're still doing a lot of research into how exactly can we prevent osteoarthritis? Because right now there's not, I can't say there's a silver bullet of like, do this one thing or follow this regimen and you won't get osteoarthritis. We mentioned there's a genetic component too, right? And there's also a component of what happened to your joints throughout your life.
Right.
So it's really, you know, as simple as it sounds, it's actually a lot of work, right, to maintain a healthy lifestyle and to keep moving our joints. But that is really the key to good joint health.
So exercise, movement.
Yeah. And I like using movement over exercise, because I think exercise can be overwhelming word for some people. And they think of like high intensive, you know, therapy, but it's really,
it's not necessarily that at all.
Yeah. Right? You just got to move and do something that you enjoy. And, you know, I like to tell people to try to add it with something social, too, if that's just to make it a part of, you know, part of their routine where they can also get some social health from it, movement, community, all those good things.
So I'm going to ask you this. You hear about all types of supplements, and I think physicians often don't, they cringe a little bit when you talk about supplements, because I suspect there's not really good studies out there. But do you know, or do you recognize, is there any benefit to taking joint supplements? Or, you know, my vet says sometimes giving your dog a joint supplement can, you know, pre-arthritis can help things. Is there any studies that you've seen in regards to people taking joint supplements ahead of time or during when they have arthritis?
Yeah, I do get this question a lot, and we have actually studied this, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of good evidence that taking these supplements can help prevent arthritis or help when you get it. There's some mixed data out there though, and it's definitely not like a for sure thing and something that I counsel or encourage people to do. But if someone's taking glucosamine or they're taking turmeric and they feel like it's helping them. I have nothing against it. It's not going to hurt. It might just hurt their pocketbook a little bit, if depending on how they're getting it. But
and some people swear by it.
Yeah, and if you know, I'm all for that. If it's helping you, and you know, there's enough that we don't understand with the body that I same thing with diet, right? If somebody tells me that they did something with their diet and it really helped them, I'm 100% supportive of them continuing those efforts, because we just don't know how every particular person might respond to those things. But there aren't any big data to support most, you know, supplement use. The caveat there for like bone health is vitamin D and calcium. We do know are important for a good bone health. And in Minnesota, especially, most of us don't get enough vitamin D from the sun. And so I do recommend, if people have low vitamin D, to take a vitamin D supplement, and to focus on eating foods high in vitamin D and calcium.
And of course, there is that thought that sometimes psychological thing is everything, that if people believe that it's helping them when they're taking a supplement and it's not a harmful thing, that whole psychological part can sometimes just be helpful.
Yeah, our brains are so powerful, and I'm constantly humbled by what our brains can do with our bodies, how they can actually change the physiology of our bodies. And so I say harness that. You know, if we're doing something that activates parts of our brain and make us feel less pain, make us feel like we can get up and move more, that's beautiful. We should keep doing that.
So what is your advice to somebody who just got diagnosed with some type of arthritis?
Yeah, so I'd say talk to your healthcare provider is the first step about best next steps for you, because so much of it will depend, again, what type of arthritis, and also where you are in that stage, early, you know, or kind of late arthritis. And so getting plugged in with a doctor. And so you'll start with your primary doctor, and they can help kind of guide whether you need a rheumatologist or not. Rheumatologists tend to treat more of the autoimmune arthritis and the gout, but not everybody with gout needs a rheumatologist, and not everybody with osteoarthritis needs a rheumatologist. So that's really helpful to kind of start there. And then everybody, well, no matter what kind of arthritis they have, you know, should be doing some physical therapy and some movement. And that is kind of the other first next step.
And it sounds like getting advice or a plan on what path to take and what you should do earlier is better than waiting.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just getting on top of it earlier with our autoimmune arthritis, you know, controlling the disease is easier if we're doing it before it gets, you know, too active and out of control. And so good follow-up, good access to care. It can be really hard to get in to see a rheumatologist. So, you know, there's a shortage of us and a lot of people who need to be seen. So getting kind of activated early can help.
Dr. Marta, I want to know if you can talk a little bit briefly about, are there studies going on that somebody can apply to in regards to arthritis? And if so, how do they find them?
Great question. So yes, there's lots of studies going on, and specifically at the University of Minnesota, we, you know, mentioned the CAR T cell ones. But there's actually, if you ask your physician, they can usually send you to a website. Or even you just kind of Google the disease that you have, say research registries or ongoing trials. Clinicaltrials.gov is a website that kind of has all of the clinical trials going on right now that people can be a part of, and the contact information for how to get involved in those trials. So clinicaltrials.gov is really a good starting point for that.
And I have not been on that website lately, but hopefully a lot of political stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that's still going, because that's such an important thing to be able to do.
Yes. And I think that's another, really important thing is that a lot of our trials are funded by pharmaceutical companies. And it's really important to also have those federally funded trials that aren't funded by pharmaceutical companies as well, because obviously there's going to be different pressures there from different motives. And so I'm a huge supporter of having kind of federal funding for our research in arthritis, especially in juvenile arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis and all these different ones that we treat.
Dr. Marta, is there any final things you'd like to leave us with? I do want to thank you very much for your time.
I'm just, you know, thank you for having me. It's always, this is a topic I feel passionate about, and I know people can do so well with arthritis with the right tools. And so I hope everyone stays warm, keeps their joints nice and warm this winter, and keeps moving.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another short station break, and we'll be right back.
Support for KFAI comes from the Berlin Music Lounge, presenting Toivo Band, Wednesday, January 7th. Minneapolis-based guitarist, composer, producer, and software engineer, Toivo Hannigan, assembles a band for a once-a-year performance. This year, it's in Berlin. The Berlin Music Lounge in Minneapolis, that is. There'll be avant improv jazz, sleepy rock, and lots of goofy things in between. More information about Toivo Hannigan's Toivo Band is available at berlinmpls.com.
This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Dr. Marta, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate your time, and I hope to have you back at another time at some point when some of the new things are coming to fruition that you can talk about. And so please stay in touch, and we'd love to have you back on. This is a global show, and we always depend on user comments and whatnot. So this show goes out all over the world, and hopefully people are listening and taking your great advice. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research PR person. Aaron is my podcaster. This week, it has been all about arthritis. We have been speaking with Dr. Marta Michalska-Smith, and she is from the University of Minnesota, and she was talking about all the stuff that is entailed in regards to arthritis. If you have a comment or topic you would like discussed here, you can email us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. That's Disability and Progress, all written out, at samjasmine, samjasmine.com. Thanks so much for your listenership and your support.
To whom do you run? To whom do you run? Let yourself let it go. The urge to have, the need to know. Stay awake through the fall. Let yourself. Thank you. You carry these wounds deep in your chest, too hard to release, and lay them.
Good evening, Twin Cities, and welcome. And thank you for tuning in tonight to KFAI Radio. You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI.